At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's the Sunday Nighter on the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined as always by Travis Ryer twice weekly during the football season. Travis, we are recapping Alabama's embarrassing performance in Tallahassee, 31-17, the final score. They go in 2-touchdown favorites. They go out 2-touchdown losers. In a game that's got Alabama fans absolutely up in arms, we will start, I guess, with a quick overview. Travis, what do you think of the entire scene down there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I wanted to ask you. I mean, because Alabama gets out to the 7-0 lead, and I'm sure from the Florida State perspective, you're getting the sense that from that fan base, oh no. Here we go again after a 2-10 season, but the defensive hold that kept that initial drive going for Florida State, I don't think you can understate how big that was. And then to finish it with a touchdown and then the belief back in that stadium, or at least some fledgling belief now in a 7-7 game, because if you get the 3-and-out there, Chase, and you take the football, go back down, either get in the end zone, even go up 2 scores there early, you're going to take a lot of that fan base out of there. Alabama wasn't able to do it. In fact, you know, Alabama wasn't able to really do much of anything in that 24-0 run. And that's what Florida State and that place needed, I got to think, in terms of belief and buying back into that program all over again after a really good season 2 years prior.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer talked during the week about how they had to start fast because they didn't play well on the road last year. He said you got to start fast to play on the road to succeed. Well, you got to start fast on both sides, not just one side. And they got the fast start. I guess you could call it a fast start. They ate 8-10 off the clock.
Yeah.
But can't complain about the Alabama offense whatsoever with that opening drive. They get 7 points. They go 16 plays. And, you know, at the end of that drive, Travis, I look up and it's 12 runs and 4 passes to go 75 and 8-10 to go up 7-0. And recognizing a couple of those were scrambles by Simpson that were design passes. I understand that. But I felt like, you know, when I saw that, I'm thinking, well, you know, Grubb's going to want to grind this thing out. And, well, Simpson ends up throwing 43 passes. And I understand you get down in the second half and, you know, maybe you can't play calling wise. You can't lean on the run as much as you want to. But I thought they did get away from the run a little bit too much. And at the end of the game, Travis, as we said, Simpson throws 4 balls on an opening touchdown drive, ends up with 43 attempts. Castellanos only threw 14 balls the whole day. He's 9 out of 14. I think Ryan Grubb would have rather had it reversed, right? 14 throws for Simpson and a whole bunch of rushing yards. The way it ended up, he had to throw it all over the place. Florida State ran for 230.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, whereas talked about this on the channel and the aftermath, just Castellano, he only threw it 14 times, but he averaged over 10 yards an attempt, you know, when he did throw it. And, you know, this is part of the narrative with Ryan Grubb during his time that 1 year with the Seattle Seahawks. Apparently they were not happy with sort of the ratio there. in terms of making a legitimate attempt to run the football. You're right. I thought, you know, they came out on first down under center, first play of the game, about a 6-yard pickup for Richard Young. You know, you can live in second and four all day long. And then off of that, they went play action, you know, hit a ball out to the flat for Jeremy Bernard for 13 yards. You know, that's the kind of mix you'd like to see. But I think you can put some of this, though, back on the defense, because they didn't help you sort of control the game at all from the outset. And you found yourself in that big deficit. And sometimes the natural reaction, especially for an offense that at its core, Chase, we can talk about the run game, and I don't disagree with your assessment from the top, but with Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb, you know this is going to be a quarterback-centric, throw-the-football-first kind of offense. At the end of the night, you're probably going to look at the breakdown, run to pass, and it's going to be more towards the latter. But that wasn't a scenario pregame if we talked about it and said, well, you know, what if Ty Simpson is asked to throw the football at least 43 times? Because as you said, he had some scrambles. It was more than 43 attempts or calls right. to throw it. Yeah. I don't think either one of us would have felt too good about the potential outcome there.
No, for sure. And I don't think Alabama, you know, part of what goes along with the Grubb offense that you referred to and what we saw certainly at Washington in 2023, didn't pay a lot of attention to the Seattle Seahawks, obviously, in 24. But, you know, this offense is supposed to take the cheap yards underneath in the mm-hmm. passing game. And there were flashes of that, but for the way Alabama, for as poorly as Alabama ran the ball on design runs, I would have liked to have seen more 5-yard pickups in the passing game that are supposed to be easy, right? I mean, 23 out of 43 yeah. in an offense that's supposed to be able to dink and dunk a little better, not the greatest percentage. And there were some drops, too.
There were some drops. Ryan Williams had some drops. Absolutely. And I agree. And I talked about this all offseason, thinking that with the change in quarterback and Grubb coming in, there would be more of those sort of layups in the passing game. And there really weren't that many. You had the nice play to Quavis out in the flat, you know, in the quick game where you got a couple of good blocks from Jeremy Bernard and Rico Scott. And he ran through some trash to hit that for kind of an explosive there in the second half. I thought, you know, it's if you throw it 43 times and you get more of that type of stuff that you're talking about and we've talked about in the offseason, then you can kind of categorize that as an extension of the run game. How many times have we heard that? But there really wasn't much of that on Saturday in Tallahassee.
No, there wasn't. You referenced the defense really just kind of keeping this offense in a hole all day. That surprised me more than anything. I'm not going to say I predicted Alabama's offensive struggles, but Alabama's offensive issues surprised me much less, far less than the defensive issues, because this Florida State offense, as we talked about midweek last week, Travis, the whole offense practically was patched together in the portal. Mm-hmm. You know, four starting linemen, the quarterback in from BC, a Squirrel White in from Tennessee at wide receiver. You got a tight end coming in there. I really expected a defense, an Alabama defense that came back with so much experience to have its way with this Florida State offense, and it just absolutely did not happen. The run game, the FSU run game was effective all day, especially on the perimeter. That's something I know you've harped about for going back to last season. Alabama just does not set the edge you need to set to, especially to stop a Gus Malzahn offense where you know he's going to be hitting the perimeter with the running game. And the pass rush, non-existent for the most part as well.
It's amazing defensively on the perimeter how it seems like Alabama now through 14 games with Kane Womack as the coordinator continues to get outflanked. It's amazing, really. And if you're not a tough team on the edges and a well-coordinated team on the edges defensively, Gus Malzahn is absolutely not the guy you want to see. And that goes back to Mike Norvell. Give this guy credit, man. Mike Norvell, with the buyout that he's got now after his latest extension, he could have sat on that thing after a 2-10 and said, no, we're going to run this back. We're going to run it back. But he didn't do that. You know, you had an overhaul of both coordinators. For better or worse, you know, that's a portal program, and it's going to be. And, you know, you're going to hit on some and you're going to miss on some. And, you know, I said this after the game last night, too. If you're an Alabama fan, you really hope Florida State is as good as you think Alabama made Florida State look in large part on Saturday in Tallahassee. But I thought even beyond some of the mysteries and some of the questions you might have about alignment and approach and substitution patterns for this Alabama defense, fundamentally, to me, was the most sobering aspect, how poor Alabama was, even when it was in the right place at the right time, in terms of just tackling and getting multiple people to the ball. You know, Florida State defensively, you saw Florida State rally to the ball. You didn't really see that from Alabama.
No, you didn't. You saw a lot of missed tackles. I've been through almost three quarters of the game watching the all 22 video and seen a lot of them. Hubbard missed a couple of tackles. You had a couple of bad missed tackles on that end around for the touchdown in the first half.
You had a couple of outright loafs.
Yeah.
On the reverse for a touchdown. You had some guys in the secondary almost looked like they were providing an escort on that play. You know, once it looked like it was, once it went for an explosive, it felt like there was a guy or two that said, well, who cares if it ends up a touchdown? You know, we gave up the explosive. So just, you know, run it back in the next series.
Yeah. I kind of, from an effort standpoint, I had an issue with Sab for sure. I mean, he was the last guy with a shot at the tackle, and he kind of floated over. I didn't think with a whole lot of urgency. Red Morgan, I thought, more to me anyway, when I watched that play, I didn't have as much of an issue with Morgan's effort as I did his read, because he took at least two steps inside like he was biting on the fake. Yeah. And once he took those two – you take two bad steps inside when you need to take two steps outside. Well, that's four steps altogether.
It all starts with soft edges, man. I mean, there was nothing out there. Jordan Renaud, as I recall on that play, he was kind of your edge defender up front. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got worked inside a couple of times on that play. And so you had to know this with a full offseason and knowing what Gus typically, in terms of his bread and butter, is ultimately going to try to do with you.
There's also, to me, a big difference between an athletic linebacker setting an edge versus a corner or a safety. I mean, if you're counting on a DB who's outside the numbers or even inside the numbers to be all you got on the edge, well, that's going to get cut up inside and the help's going to be late too often. It was certainly too late too often for Alabama.
It felt like multiple occasions in the game, Alabama was counting on Deontay Lawson coming off an ACL to get over the top and make plays on the outside, which isn't realistic, even with, again, all of the positivity we heard about Deontay. Give Deontay, by the way, a lot of credit for being what he was, you know, given the injury he had and the time frame that he was working with. This is not to knock Deontay at all. Mm-hmm. I think Deontay did everything he could possibly do that was within reason, given, you know, the situation he was coming off of.
Yeah. Linemen don't need to be your contained men, and you don't need to lean on the corners to force things inside too much either. I don't know. You're right. I mean, they just got killed on the edges. And, you know, I saw a few three-man rushes that went nowhere. I'm in Kirby Smart's camp on the three-man rush. Don't have one. Don't have a three-man rush in the play unless it's, you know, a Hail Mary situation. I don't want to see only three guys rushing the passer ever. And, you know, on the deep ball that Castellanos threw in the first quarter that went incomplete, that very easily could have been a big chunk play. There wasn't anybody within 10 yards of him. That was a three-man rush.
Well, I get it with Castellanos in some ways in that, you know, Nick even had the mush rush, but it was a four-man mush rush. You know, it wasn't a three. And it was either or for Alabama, it felt like. It was either probably not enough in terms of guys. And then there were a couple occasions where they were too aggressive in the pass rush, and they got beyond the set point that they needed to get, and they kind of opened up some lanes. So, you know, the quarterback and Tommy could kind of do his thing with his legs. So there was a mix, but I'm with you. I'm typically not going to be a three-man rush guy.
Elsewhere, Travis, what do you think of special teams for Alabama? They got the big play on the muffed punt in that second half. And if I recall, they were not able to capitalize with points on that, right? Turnover on downs there.
Fourth and so seven, and Ty, you know, gets some heat, does a good job of getting out to his left. And there's a lot of green out there for him to probably, with his legs, go ahead and convert that. And, you know, he kind of just, he short armed it. There's no other way to put it. He had Ryan Williams wide ass open and threw a one hop.
Got the first, I shouldn't say it's our first look, because we've seen Simpson in backup duty a fair bit, especially against South Florida 2 years ago. Athletically, I liked what I saw from Simpson. Escapability. I did think sometimes when he broke the pocket, he gave up too much ground. You know, you'd like to see him be a little bit more straight ahead when he breaks the pocket, instead of spilling out to the edges where six-yard sacks sometimes can become 15-yard sacks when you do that. But that said, he can definitely run. He can definitely affect the game positively with his feet.
He can run, and he's tough. I mean, the want-to, as I've said a couple times in the last day is not within question. I know he had sort of the comments after the game. It was, you know, sort of his maybe Tim Tebow attempt after Florida lost to Ole Miss in, 2007. And
Tebow. I don't think that one's going on a plaque on Brian.
You don't think that's going to get plaqued up eventually?
No.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. No, I mean, seriously, the guy is a real competitor. I thought he was as athletic as I expected. I expected him to be kind of the guy we saw in terms of athleticism and agility and mobility and those type of things. And I did like some of the things Grubb did to kind of getting by design out on the corner, because I still think he's probably more comfortable in those situations. I thought he ditched multiple times when he didn't really need to. I thought the fourth and five, when they go to Kevin Riley across the field in the flat on a fourth and five.
Right.
I thought that wasn't the way to go there, because I don't know if maybe Ty thought he was going to get five or six guys on a fourth and five, a blitz. Like, it was almost like he had decided to go hot out to Riley in the flat, you know, and that was a long throw, a tough throw. Ball placement wasn't great, but he really didn't get pressure on that play. So he might've gotten fooled a little bit. I don't know. But if he sits in there just a little bit, he's got Jeremy Bernard crossing, you know, and you like that, I would think, a good bit better on fourth and five than, you know, trying to hit. And Kevin Riley made a hell of a catch, by the way, on the ball. But, you know, it was in a place where it was just short of the sticks and he wasn't going to be able to get there. So, you know, I thought Ty was fine. You know, I didn't walk away feeling really either way about his performance. I think Kalen had some comments post game that were a little telling. I think Kalen kind of echoed what I was talking about, and that he's got to be a little more patient in there and a little more trustworthy. And he had some pressure at times. There's no doubt about it, but there were times where, you know, he ditched and he mm-hmm. likes to work to his arm side, especially to that right.
Yeah.
And talked about this after the game. You're going to get schemed up for that. You know, mm-hmm. they're going to take that away. So, you know, first start on the road, solid opponent. I think there's some potential there to continue to grow. But I'm sure he would tell you he needs to be better. But I thought even more so, a lot of the guys around him have got to be better moving forward, including,
no doubt about it.
Including the guys dialing it up.
Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give it a like and a subscribe. Travis posts some fantastic content on Ryer on YouTube, Alabama related and otherwise. So be sure to check that out. Also want to tell you about a nonprofit organization called Parker Covers Alabama that myself and former Alabama defensive end John Copeland have launched here in the last week or so. Some of our viewers and listeners on Talking Tide, Travis, know that Mike Parker and myself and John hosted a television show on WVUA for 15 years. John and I are still doing it. Mike passed away at age 42 in February. You, as a matter of fact, Travis, when you were a Tuscaloosa resident, were an occasional substitute hosting Crimson Cover. But what we're doing, Mike, of course, was a quadriplegic. He was in a wheelchair for more than 20 years. And, you know, he was just an inspiration to both John and I. And so what we're doing with this nonprofit at Parker Covers Alabama is supporting wheelchaired residents of the state in various ways, whether it might be wheelchair parts, wheelchair replacements, you know, maybe build an access ramp here and there, et cetera. Maybe a little scholarship money for somebody in a wheelchair, whatever the case may be. But ParkerCoversAlabama.com is the website. Please check it out. Please give if you can. Mike was a friend of mine and Travis's. As a matter of fact, Travis introduced me to Mike, and I'm thankful for that as well.
Mike, just a one of a kind and an all-timer. Mike, the mayor, I called him. It seemed like everybody in Tuscaloosa knew Mike Parker, and with good reason. Just one of those people you're not going to forget after you meet him the first time, and an incredible inspiration, like you said, Chase, and absolutely love what you and Cope have put together. And again, it's something we'll continue to talk about here, and I know you will other places as well.
Appreciate that. Looking forward to doing whatever we can with Parker Covers Alabama at ParkerCoversAlabama.com. All right, the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Rolling on, Travis. We haven't really touched on the offensive line a whole bunch for Alabama. Really the only unit that wasn't subject to mass substitutions. Obviously, Alabama stuck with one quarterback. But other than that, we saw twos all over the field besides offensive line and QB. Kapilovic stuck with his five for this one. And, of course, Dewberry started with Jaden Roberts out. Your thoughts on how that group played as a whole? I happen to think that the pass protection could have been better. Obviously, yeah. the run blocking wasn't great either. But I think the deficit probably had something to do with that as well.
Yeah, I got to think, as it goes back to your point earlier, you wouldn't want to put that offensive line in a situation where you're throwing it 43 times either.
Yeah.
You know, down in and down out, it becomes a little bit easier for a defense to kind of get in that mode when that's pretty much the route you decide to take, or perhaps in some ways you were forced to take once you got down 24-7 and you know, you kind of feel things slipping away a little bit. I thought they did a pretty good job in the zone run game, especially on the left side. I thought Cam Dewberry did some good work along with Parker Brailsford. I thought Caden Proctor as a run blocker did some good things. As you said, pass protection certainly could have been better. They got a little bit predictable, though, so I kind of, you know, look at some of that with that. But, you know, I thought that Parker Brailsford had one of the bigger plays in the game too. You know, when Ty, again, on a third and long when you're in a position to get points. He did this a couple of times. I didn't like this with Ty either, and I'm sure this is an area where they'll look into it and he'll grow. But, and I understand, man, it's you want to get in the end zone, especially when your team is down double digits, or you know, you're in a situation where you're behind. But third and 13, third and 10 or plus, you can't disrespect the opportunity for points. And they essentially lost points the first time because of a negative play. And they end up going from a 46-yard attempt, if they just throw it incomplete, to a 53 because you take the loss.
Right.
And, of course, Talty comes up a little bit short on the 53. But you did it again, too. But give Parker Brailsford credit, man. He scooped, and he was trying to score with that thing, wasn't he? He even had it in the left hand. Now, he might be left-handed. I don't know. But he had it in the left hand, and he was there for all the smoke, and you ended up saving 3 points because of
that. Yeah, no question. You can't take – when you're in field goal range as a quarterback, you got to think throwaway before you think anything negative. And, you know, like you said, that's something that you'd think Ty Simpson would grow on over time and experience. Donald Andrews in the podcast, Travis, defense is the issue. OL, not tough. I don't necessarily disagree with either one of those. I think that, again, though, to me, the defense is the glaring issue that has Alabama fans probably most up in arms and should.
Well, in Donald's comments, going back to the preseason, you know, we heard so much about this might be the best offensive line in the country. And I understand Jaden Roberts, you know, wasn't available until very late in the week. So you knew he wasn't really going to be a part of this thing, even though it was announced on what, Thursday or Friday, that he would be available. Right. And also defensively, all the glowing.
Does Alabama need better sources?
I thought, wow. Yeah, you would think the sourcing there is impeccable. You'd also, you know, I don't know what the point was really in that, but yeah. I mean, other than to try to sell or, you know, more yay Alabama, but.
Cleared to play sure sounds like you're gonna play. I mean, you know,
it's two
different things, but why come out with cleared?
I understand.
Not gonna be in action. Yeah.
Well, as we both know, there's a difference between cleared and difference between being ready to play.
Yeah.
And even on when, and we know this too. I mean, Wednesday's the day, and Wednesday, as we talked about here on the show, it wasn't happening for Jaden Roberts. So, but anyway, offensive line, defense, all these things we heard in the run-up to the season. And my response was very, very simple to that. Put it on tape. And the tape we got really from both those areas, certainly with the defense, I'm with you there, even more so, probably a good bit more so. I'm not as much down on the OL as I am the defense.
Yeah. Yeah, defense has got a lot to look at with that drawing board this week. ULM upcoming, Travis, second game of the season for Alabama. A rebound, of course, is going to be expected at home at Bryant-Denny Stadium next Saturday. And then around the corner from that, home game against Wisconsin. And then, of course, a road trip to Athens, which won't be any fun at all. That's going to be a game Georgia's going to be more than ready to play.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what's realistic, again, for this football team moving forward. Monroe is not much coming up. So, and I think most Alabama fans, the problem, too, for Kalen and this program is that last year you could kind of write those struggles off as a transition involving a team. But when it happens in the next season opener, like it did on Saturday, now the perception or the belief is you got a program problem. Last year, you could write off as this is a team problem.
Mm-hmm.
When you have what happened on Saturday afternoon happen, when your fan base still can vividly recall the 2008 season opener, year two for Nick Saban when it felt like you and I were in that press box at the Georgia Dome. It felt like everything had changed.
Completely.
It was crazy. Yeah. And then you see that in the season opener a year two for Kalen DeBoer and this staff, and you go, this might be worse than what we saw last season. So, you know, you're going to have to deal with that. The noise is real now. It's not noise related to a team underperforming. It's noise related to the program is kind of off the rails with this guy. Not that I believe in any form or fashion Kalen DeBoer's in trouble, because this is a totally different era of collegiate athletics from a financial perspective. You know, the coaches are going to benefit more and more. They've got the huge buyouts to begin with, but with what revenue sharing and NIL does to your athletic department, it's not going to be as easy to stroke those kind of checks. But sure. I mean, you Wisconsin, I think, had a quarterback injury in their opener. So regardless, you expect to take care of business at home against Wisconsin. But it feels like to me, Chase, a lot of people, even within this fan base, are going to check back in when it's time to play Georgia. Right.
Right.
This team goes to Athens. It's like, yeah, great. You know, these games coming up, whatever. I'm not really investing or even coming close again until this team not only goes to Georgia, but I see what they do in Athens.
At the top of the show, you were talking about realistic expectations. Let's kind of go there. I mean, for me, Travis, after what I saw in Tallahassee, I don't look at any conference game as a gimme or a W for Alabama at this point, home or away. Now, I understand it's just one game, and Alabama, I think, has enough talent to turn this around. But, you know, you can look up and down the schedule, and you can't call it. First of all, you can't call it.
Where are the layups?
Yeah, I don't see. You can't call Vanderbilt a layup, even at home. Not after what happened last year.
You've already said you're going to crush them like an ant, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't bother, by the way. That doesn't bother Diego Pavia. He loves it.
No. Or Clarkway. No. Neither one of them.
Now, look, I will. We'll see what happens in Athens, because then you come home the next week with Vanderbilt. But your point to me is valid. What about, you know, what it does for me is it creates more doubt for games like at Missouri and at South Carolina.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Which I think we're already going to be challenging. But what they do now is, even if you thought Alabama had a little bit of an edge in those games, now you're thinking at best they're toss-ups. And then you see what LSU did last night in Clemson, South Carolina. And Blake Baker, by the way, second year on the job as the defensive coordinator at LSU. And you remember that defense that Alabama just absolutely gashed in Baton Rouge? Didn't look anything like that defense that we saw from LSU last night. That defense is athletic, nasty, locked in, well-coordinated. So, you know, that game, thankfully, for Alabama is in Tuscaloosa this year. But there's – we know less about this Alabama team after the opener in some ways than we did going into it. And what we do know ain't so good coming out of the opener.
No, Alabama now 2-4 in road games under Kalen DeBoer, Travis. 2-4 on the road. I mean, you mentioned Missouri and South Carolina. Those are going to be tough games to win for Alabama. They really are. And you know,
But what about, you know, the thing is, even though you get Tim Keenan back at some point, right, and you get Jam Miller back, you know, in the next month or so, if you look at it from that perspective, does it maybe change your thinking, or do you feel like maybe it's beyond even just the physical attributes of some of these guys? It's more of an intangible thing, you know, with this group.
I see more issues on defense than Tim Keenan's return can solve. That's for sure.
Well, so, he's probably going to get subbed out every other snap. So,
yeah. And how long is Alabama going to be? And how long is Alabama going to be without Ryan Williams? And we don't know that either, right? So,
well, you don't mess with that at all. I mean, if you got to sit him till Georgia, you don't need him. I mean, you don't need him this week for sure. If you need him against Wisconsin, then you probably don't even need to go to Athens.
Right.
You know,
no doubt, no doubt. All right. That is, go ahead.
But yeah, I think, you know, the sort of the thing you weren't banking on was that in year two, you're still wondering about the makeup and the wiring of this football team and this football program. It's now not just a team thing, because that was last year. Now it's more of a, you know, what's the wiring of this football program?
Yeah, we heard from Kalen DeBoer during fall camp a couple of things. One, we heard about how tough that off-season program was. They were especially hard on the guys, right? In the off-season, he felt like the team, I think he said, had a harder edge to it, et cetera.
No, edges aren't hard.
They didn't pack it for the trip to Tallahassee.
It's a defense, especially, that just seems like doesn't deliver. You know what I'm saying? Like, between however they're aligned or whatever, this isn't a defense that delivers blows, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like they catch more than they throw.
Yeah.
And watching LSU last night with Blake Baker, man, you might beat it, but those cats were delivering blows for 60 minutes last night.
No doubt. All right. Well, we are done after 35 minutes here on the Talking Tide podcast. I want to thank our viewers and listeners for joining us here on the Sunday Nighter. Travis, looking forward to us getting together again to talk about ULM. For Travis Ryer, I am Chase Goodbread with the Tuscaloosa News, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.